Mantra 4. Anejad ekam manaso javiyo naina deva apnuvan purvam arsat tad dvato anyan atyeti tishtat tasmin apo matarisva dadati. Mantra 5. Tad ejati tan naijati tad dure tad vantike tad antar asya sarvasya tad yu sarvasyasya bayata. Mantra 6. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani evanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatona viju gupsate. Mantra 7. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bud vijanata tatra ko mohan ka shoka ekatvam anupashyate. Mantra 8. Sa paryajak chukram akayam avranam asna viram sudam apapa vidam kavir manisi paribu swayambur yatha tatyato arthan vyadak chasvatibhya samabhya. Mantra 9. Andam tama pravishanti ye avidyam upashate tato buya ivate tamo ya vu vidyayam rata. Mantra 10. Anyad evayur vidyaya nayad ahur avidyaya iti shushruma diranam yenastad vicha chakshire. Mantra 11. Vidyam cha vidyam cha yas tad vedo bayam saha avidyaya mrityum tirtva vidyaya amritam ashnute. Mantra 12. Andam tama pravishanti ye sambutim upashate tato buya ivate tamo yayu sambutyam rata. Did we cover 12? Yeah, 12. Mantra 13. Anyad evahu sambhavad anyad ahur asambhavat iti shushruma dhiranam ye nastad vicha chakshire. And finally, mantra 14. Sambutim cha vinasam cha yastad vido bayam saha vinasena mrityum tritva sambutyam ritam ashnute. So now let's do the English translations for these mantras, starting with mantra 4, going back to page number 33 of the Isha-Upanishad. And let's chant the English together. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him, although in one place he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He who systematically sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. Mantra 7. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks, in quality one with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Mantra 8. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Mantra 9. Those who engage in the culture of nascent activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. Mantra 10. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Mantra 11. We are reading from the Sri Ishopanishad, page 75. Only one who can learn the process of nations and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Number 12. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. Mantra 13. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undiminished authorities who clearly explained it. Mantra 14. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal bliss of eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Okay, we started with Mantra 4, so we will revisit that. So let's do this. As we take up the mantra, I would like one person to chant the Sanskrit and another person to read the translation. We have the microphones here, correct? Yeah, you can start, Hiral, and then we can go at the back.
Anejat ekam manaso javiyo naina deva apnuvan purva marshat tadhavato nyanathyeti tisthat tasme napo matarishva dadati.
Translation. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place He controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence.
So we will have a discussion on this. We will take up one at a time. So in this mantra, mantra 4, several points are being made. Firstly, that the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Sri Krishna by all Vedic scriptures, he is fixed in his abode. He himself, the personality, has qualities by which he is so swift that he is swifter than the mind. You know the mind, how it is? The mind is miraculous. You have the modern world, we have these jets that travel at a phenomenal speed, and that take you from here to Europe in less than 12 hours. But the mind is even faster than that. You have a thought. Just now you think about India. I'm in Chennai or Mumbai, and you'll be there. This, the mind is that fast. It says that the Lord is even faster than the mind. And he's so fast that if anybody ran with him, like even the demigods, he can overcome all of them by running. And that the demigods, even though they have been appointed as the administrators of the universe, cannot approach him. That the Lord is fixed in one place, but he controls the demigods who are providing rain and air. Like Indra, for example, we know is providing rain. And the Lord controls him. And the Lord surpasses everyone in all excellence. So this mantra is talking about the qualities of the Lord. Now when we go to the purport, Srila Prabhupada cites several verses to actually support this. And what we are going to do is, we're going to look up those verses that Prabhupada is citing to support these statements that are made in the translation. One is that the Lord is fixed in his abode. And here Prabhupada cites the Brahma Samhita 537. So you have the book there in front of you. And let's look that up. So 537 is on page 61. Ramananda Saka, would you like to read that verse?
Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita bhis tabhirya eva nijarupataya kalabhi goloka eva nivasatyakilatma bhuto govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami.
Yeah, translation. You go ahead.
I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord. Residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency possessed of the 64 artistic activities, in the company of her confidants, Sakhis, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual rasa.
So the Brahma Samhita here is saying that the residence of the Lord is Goloka Vrindavan. It is also known as Krishna Loka. In order to get an idea about where this Goloka is, other parts of the Brahma Samhita pointed out that it is the ultimate destination in the spiritual sky. So we have this material sky, and in the material sky we have this cosmic manifestation, the universe, with all the planets that are there here, the material planets that are around the sun, going around the sun, that we cannot even fathom or imagine what that extremity of the material world is, what is the ultimate boundary, if you will, of the material world is, let alone the spiritual world, because the spiritual world is beyond this material world. There is the reference in the scriptures to the spiritual sky. And it is in the spiritual sky that all these Vaikuntha planets are there. The spiritual sky is lit up by the light coming from the Lord. It's lit up by Brahman effulgence, Brahma Jyoti, that is coming from the body of Krishna. That is lighting up the Vaikuntha planets. In the material world, it is artificial or borrowed light. It is said that the material world is so dense, it has been compared to a coconut with a shell. Half of it is water, and it's all dark inside. And the material world, in order to be lit up, has to be lit up by the sun and the moon that have only the borrowed light from Krishna. Original light is coming from the Lord. So that's the abode in the spiritual world where Goloka Vrindavan is. And what Mantra 4 says is that even though Krishna is there, is residing there with his intimate associates, engaged in his pastimes and his rasa leela, he can be present at any instant, in the material world. He appears, for example, in response to his devotees. He says that in the Bhagavad Gita, that I respond to those who surrender to me appropriately. The amount of surrender that they have, Krishna responds. Krishna makes himself available in an instant. He can be present in the material world. And one analogy that is given here in the purport by Prabhupada is he compares this Lord's presence being fixed in Goloka Vrindavan and appearing instantly in the material world to the qualities of fire. That fire is fixed at a place. You know, you may see fire occurring at a place, you'll be able to even point out, oh, that's where the fire is occurring. But the light and heat that fire is emanating are traveling quite a distance, we know. They travel quite far. So the Lord has energies, and these energies of the Lord are pervading the entire universe. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, describes three energies of the Lord. 7, verses 7, 4, and 7, 5, and we can quickly look that up in order there may be a question may come in the test as to how many potencies there are of the Lord. And if we go to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 4, we'll see what Krishna has to say there. So, Shailesh Prabhu, if you would read for us both text 4 and text 5, which are there in the Bhagavad Gita. Text 4 is on 326. There's a microphone just behind you. You can use that. However you prefer. If you want to do English, that's also fine.
Bhumir apo nalo vayu kham mano bhudir evacha ahankara itiyame bhinna prakritir astada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. All together, these eight constitute mind separated material energies. Aprayam itas tvi anayam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yaedam dharyate jagat. Besides this, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material. inferior nature.
Thank you. So in chapter 7, Krishna clearly points out that this cosmic material manifestation is his external potency. It is his marginal energy. It is emanating from the Lord. And the living entity, material manifestation, is his exterior potency. It's a lower form of energy emanating from the Lord. And in 7.5, he says even the living entities are my energies. They represent his marginal potency. The living entities, the Bhagavad Gita says in another part in chapter 15, Mamayo Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. These living entities are my parts and parcels. They are my fragmental parts, Krishna says, who are struggling in the material world. The same chapter, chapter 15, the Lord will say then that beyond these two energies is the internal potency of the Lord by which he exists. He exists as the Supreme Parabrahman, or he exists as Purushottama, that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So to review, there is the Lord's material energy. Please come in and be seated. The Lord's material energy, which is his external potency by which the cosmic manifestation exists. His marginal potency by which the living entities exist. And finally, the internal potency of the Lord by which he exists, and also his plenary portions exist. And the Lord as such has entered the universe through this plenary portion. We will see later that the Lord will say that I am present not only in the living entities as the super soul, but I am also present in the atom as Antaryami. And that is the plenary portion of the Lord. So, Mantra 4, Sri Ishopanishad, which is what we are discussing, says that although the Lord is fixed in his abode, he can be present at any place in the material world because of his energies that are pervading all over the universe. Now, another point that is being made here in Mantra 4 is that the demigods cannot approach him. First of all, he says that they cannot approach him, that he's controlling them from afar. The demigods are said to be the administrators in the world, like Indra, for example. He's in charge of bringing rain, but he's directly under the control of the Lord. So the demigods are controlled by him, but the demigods as such cannot approach him. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada will cite a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. He will cite chapter 10, text 2, which says that not even the great rishis and suras can know him. What to speak of the asuras? Let's look at that. And that is 10.2 in the Bhagavad Gita. And I'd like one of you at the back, maybe Priya, you can read that verse. We should have the other microphone available also. We can keep one in front and one in the back, because we'll be going through these verses. This is on page 446 of the Bhagavad Gita.
Do you want me to read the
sentence? That's fine. Yes, you may.
Name viduhu surakanaha prabhavam na maharshayaha aham adhirhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvasaha. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages.
Thank you. So it's clearly pointed out here in support for the statement in the Ishopanishad that the Lord is the origin of the demigods and the demigods cannot approach him, which is what the mantra 4 is saying. So we learn from mantra 4 then about these energies of the Lord and how being fixed in one place, he can be present at the same time in the material manifestation. Let's go to mantra 5 now. On page 37 of the Ishopanishad, we can continue from the back and move on. Let's go to the next person, and you can read mantra 5 from the Ishopanishad.
Tadejati tan.
Yeah, just turn it on.
Tadejati tan naijati tad dure tav tad va antike tad antar asya sarvasya tad yu sarvasyasya bahaya taha. Do you want me to read the English?
Yes, please. Yes.
The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything.
Thank you. So what has been given here in Mantra 5 is a description of the some of the Lord's transcendental activities, which are executed by what is called his inconceivable potencies. You know, the Lord is full in six opulences. And he has wealth, he has power, he has strength, he has renunciation. He's the supreme. That if you talk about any living entity that you may have encountered in your lifetime, you have come across people who are famous, you have come across people who are rich, you come across people who are strong and powerful, but you rarely come across those who have all these qualities. Somebody may be rich, but then there is something else that is deficient or lacking. Somebody may be famous, but then they are hankering for something else. Something else is missing. So the jiva soul, the living entity, who are fragmental parts of the Lord, as we saw, they are just his marginal energies, are not equal to the Lord in quantity. The living entities are infinitesimal. The Lord is infinite. We'll talk later about this difference between the living entities and the Lord with respect to quality and quantity. But in quantity, the Lord is more powerful. He's superior. And this mantra is referring to such inconceivable potencies. When somebody has all these six opulences, it's like inconceivable that the Lord has that. And so some of these things, some statements that are made here, that the Lord walks but does not walk, he's far away but he's near, they sound like contradictions. But devotees of the Lord, the Bhagavatas, can understand these contradictions in the context of these inconceivable potencies that the Lord possesses. Those who are not devotees, they are Suryas and others, who often deride the Lord and say that because Sri Krishna had taken birth and come as a human being, they ascribe material qualities to him and cannot therefore accept these inconceivable potencies. One example is the Mayavadi philosophers of Banaras, who said that God is impersonal. There, they have partial or incomplete knowledge of the God. They are equating God with just one feature of the Lord, which is Brahman effulgence, Brahma Jyoti. But Srimad Bhagavatam says that the absolute truth is recognized in three forms: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. If one just takes Brahman effulgence to be equal to the Lord itself, that's just a partial description, because that is just that is the light emanating from the body of Krishna. It is not Krishna per se. Krishna is the source from whom the life is from whom the light is emanating. And these Mayavadi philosophers are getting caught up in Brahma Jyoti and saying that that's the Lord and calling him impersonal. That's an incomplete description. And so they cannot understand this inconceivable potencies of the Lord, because they do not have the complete conception of the Lord that the Bhagavatam says or points out. So we should not take it for granted that these features of the Lord do not exist. Just because we cannot see the Lord doesn't mean that they cannot exist. The Mayavadi philosophers essentially say that we cannot see the Lord. They have reached conclusions about Brahman effulgence, and so they equate with that. So they say the personal feature doesn't exist. But the living entity already is endowed with defects. We learn, for example, in the Nectar of Instruction that there are four defects of the living entities. Let's review that. Can anyone point out what those four defects are? Shailesh Prabhu, any idea?
He commits mistakes.
Yes.
He's illusion.
Yes.
He has the propensity to cheat others.
Yes.
Correct.
So the fourth one is he has imperfect senses. His senses as such, which include sight, are imperfect. How can he see the Supreme Lord, who is Parabrahman and fixed in his abode in Goloka? The Lord himself says in the Bhagavad Gita that one can understand me only by devotional service. He doesn't say that a person can see me by a certain process. Only when one practices devotional service, one can know him. So by this, the material eyes, which are defective, they cannot see the Lord. And so to conclude that he doesn't have inconceivable potencies would again be an erroneous conclusion, because our senses themselves are defective. Okay, so it is pointing out here that the Lord has this inconceivable potencies. But the Lord is very merciful. The purport goes on to say that for devotees who desire to see him, he comes in the form of Archa Vigraha. He comes in this devotee form. He comes in this form of a deity, that this deity that we are seeing is not just an imagination of some person. There are all forms of regulations by which these deities are even made and constructed, that the Lord, for his devotees who wish to approach him in the material world, is so merciful that he comes in this form, Archa Vigraha. Supposedly made of earth, stone, or wood, but that in order to please his devotees, the Lord even appears in this form. So, in our present state of imperfect material existence, we actually cannot see the Supreme Lord due to imperfect vision, yet those devotees who want to see him by means of material vision are favored by the Lord with this Archa Vigraha form. The purport also cites a couple of more verses from the Bhagavad Gita, which I think we should visit, and these relate to how the Lord is responding to the devotees. So one of them is Bhagavad Gita 4:11. Let's look that up. And you should have the Bhagavad Gita in front of you. And so let's continue from the back. Bharani Mataji, if you could, there's a microphone behind you. And if you can read the text for 4:11, which is on page 208.
As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha.
Okay, so here, this verse is providing support for how the Lord treats his devotees. The way he treats them depends upon the devotee's degree of surrender. If there is no surrender, the Lord is not obligated to reveal himself to anyone. He reserves the right not to reveal himself. Only to those souls who surrender unto him. So, for these surrendered souls, he is within easy reach. He can be reached easily. He's not far, he's near. Whereas for the unsurrendered soul, he is far, far away and cannot be approached. Now, Srila Prabhupada expounds on this a little bit to mention about these qualities of the Lord. Because the Lord has appeared in the form of Archa Vigraha in response to his devotee's desire, one may erroneously construe that the Lord has material qualities. But this is not the case. So there are two key words that are important in this purport. One is Saguna, which means with qualities, and the other is Nirguna, which means without qualities. And they are very important. The word Saguna, which means with quality, does not imply that when the Lord appears with perceivable qualities, we can perceive the Archa Vigraha form, we can perceive the deity. It doesn't imply that he must take on a material form and be subject to the laws of material nature. That's not the case. The Lord has appeared for his devotees so that they can approach him in the material world, but that doesn't make the Lord material. In fact, the Lord doesn't have a material body or a mind. He is just one. Everything, his body, himself, his form, is all spiritual. And also, he is not subject to the laws of material nature because he himself has created the material manifestation, as we read before in 7, 4, and 5, that these material elements are my own creation, they emanate from me. He has also created the living entities. So how could he become subject to them? He is above them. He is actually controlling them. So it is pointed out here that the Lord is both Saguna and Nirguna. Saguna in the sense he has qualities, perceivable qualities, but they are not material. It's like he is without qualities. That means without material qualities. He's both Saguna and Nirguna. And then in the purport, another verse is cited, and we will take that up from the Bhagavad Gita, and that is 4:8. So we are in chapter 4. Let's go to 4:8. And so let's continue in line, just passed on the microphone to your left. Bharani Mataji, yes. And would you like to read that text for? Yes, please.
Sure.
4:8.
According to the Bhagavad Gita, A sadhu, holy man, is a man in Krishna consciousness. A person may appear to be irreligious, but if he has the qualifications of Krishna consciousness wholly and fully, he has to be understood to be a sadhu.
Yes, if you would kindly read the text above. Yes, that'll be suffice.
To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium.
So, in the previous verse that we looked at, which was 4:11, mentioned how the Lord is treating his devotees. And here, it points out how the Lord is going to treat those who do not surrender unto him. That, in fact, it states that the Lord appears from time to time, as he appeared 5,000 years ago, to vanquish non-believers. You see, to annihilate the miscreants. He appears to vanquish non-believers, but at the same time, he appears to protect his believers. And it is often said that he, of course, descends to favor his devotees and not for any other purpose. But the Bhagavad Gita does point out that when in the universe religious principles get abused and irreligion is on the rise, the Lord will come to straighten them out. And the miscreants who are in fact creating trouble are annihilated. So we see that in response to the degree of surrender that one has, the Lord gives appropriate treatment. That's what Mantra 5 of Ishopanishad points out. And that Mantra 5 then concludes with another point that is made in that mantra, and that is that the Lord has said he is within everything and yet he is outside of everything. See, another contradiction, but that is due to his inconceivable potencies. So the support for that comes from the Brahma Samhita. Let's look at Brahma Samhita 5:35. You have the Brahma Samhita in front of you. That's that small book. And please open to text 35, which is on page 58. And the next person can read the English translation. Sorry, it's on page 59.
So he is undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe at one and at the same time. Such is Premeval Lord, whom I adore.
So this Premeval Lord, who is Govinda, the Supreme Lord, according to Brahma Samhita, enters everything. And he enters these things through his plenary portion. We talked about earlier that the Lord exists with his internal potency, and his plenary expansions are also his internal potency. The living entities are the marginal potency, and the material world is his external inferior energy. But the Lord, when he's entering, like as the super soul Paramatma in the heart of everyone, it is through his internal potency, his plenary portion. Not only that, but the Lord says he has also entered the atom. In fact, the Lord is there in his creation. He is in everything. And different things in the universe are reflecting the presence of the Lord to different degrees. It depends really upon the purity, if you will, of the specimen that you have there, upon the degree of purity, it will reflect the presence of the Lord to that extent. The Lord is there in the creation. If he were not there in the material creation, this material world would be just a dark world, be full of darkness. And it's because of the presence of the Lord that there is light and he is reflected therein. So he is in everything. He is entered everything. He is there also in the atom. Now for Bhakti Shastri students, the crucial keywords here are antaryami, that the Lord is within everything as antaryami. As the antaryami, what that means is he witnesses everything that is going on. Just like the super soul that is there at the Paramatma in everyone is witnessing what the soul is doing. And when the soul transmigrates from one body to the other, the Lord, the super soul who is with him, is going to remind him. He's going to remind him of what he has done. Or if he had done devotional service in the previous birth, he will remind him to take it up again. That is the antaryami. So he's there outside in his manifestation. Arjun saw his universal Virat form. That's the external form of the Lord. He's outside in the universe. And he's also there inside. Living entities as well as things. He's inside as the antaryami, where he's witnessing what is going on. Okay. We can now move to Mantra 6 then of the Ishopanishad. And so we are on page 43. And let's have the next person read both the Sanskrit and the English. So pass on the microphone, whoever is ready. Page 43.
Yastu sarvana bhutanya mane tat. Manyevanupashyati sarvabhuteshu yatmanam tatona vijugupsate. He who systematically sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcel, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being.
Okay, so in Mantra 6, what is being described is the way a Mahabhagavata, a Mahatma, a great sage, would see the Lord. That a Mahabhagavata would see things in the material universe. That he sees, the mantra says, everything in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the highest form of perception. But it's the quality of a Mahabhagavata. It is not the quality of every living entity. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada goes to describe the other entities of how they would view the Lord. In fact, he says that the perception of the Lord can be realized in three stages. The lowest stage of realization is what a Kanishta Adhikari would display. Now, this is important for Bhakti Shastri. Let's talk about a Kanishta Adhikari. Could anyone mention any characteristics or qualities of a Kanishta Adhikari? Yeah, Hiral at the back.
Kanishta Adhikari is basically a neophyte devotee. He's just in the beginning stage. Mm-hmm. And he believes in deity worship and goes to the temple. But he might not follow the advanced rules. He might not be spiritually advanced.
That's correct. Yes, a good point. This is...
He sees the Lord only in the temple.
Yes, he sees the Lord only in the temple. What we just discussed about the presence of the Lord that he is everywhere. We said he is in the living entities as Paramatma. He's there in the atom, the Antaryami form, the Lord. That a Kanishta Adhikari is not going to see. This is a description of a number of people there in the material world who may go to the temple and see the Lord there, but that is it. Beyond that, the Lord for them may not exist. And these are devotees who are simply trying to transcend the material boundary to reach the spiritual plane, but they are not advanced devotees. There is a second stage of progression, and that second stage is called that of a Madhyam Adhikari. So who would a Madhyam Adhikari be? What are the characteristics of a Madhyam Adhikari?
Madhyam Adhikari are more advanced than the Kanishtha Adhikari. Mm-hmm. And they behave differently with four types of people. Like they will see Lord as a super soul. They will associate with devotees. Mm-hmm. And they also see people who have no faith in God or religion, like the atheist, as different, and they will also differentiate with people who are innocent people and who don't know about the religion. And they are advanced, but they are not as advanced as the Uttamadhikari.
Good points. So these devotees, they make distinctions between four categories of beings. One is the Supreme Lord, the devotees of the Lord. The third is the innocent, who have no knowledge of the Lord, but when that is communicated to them, they may tend to take on to a spiritual path. And the fourth is the atheists, who have no faith in the Lord, and a Madhyam Adhikari is just going to avoid these people. But there is a higher stage beyond this, and that is the stage of the Uttam Adhikari. So what are the characteristics then of the Uttam Adhikari? Go ahead.
Basically, the translation of this verse is essentially saying the qualities of Uttam Adhikari. Sarvabhutani yah pasyet bhagavad bhavam atmanah. He will see in every living entity the spark. He will see every living entity as a spirit soul, not just based on the outer body. And he will engage everyone in Lord's service. And he will see everything in relation to the Lord and acts in that way. So he doesn't make a distinction between who is a devotee, who is a non-devotee, and his faith is very strong.
That's correct, yes. In fact, this Uttam Adhikari is one who has this realization that the Lord is in his creation. He's there in all the living entities, the 8,400,000 species that exist, that the Lord is there, and he sees the presence of the Lord in the creation. He doesn't make a distinction between a Brahmana, who may be a very advanced devotee, and, for example, or a dog or a cow, which is an animal, a living entity. He sees the presence of the Lord in all of them. So he's the most advanced, the highest form of the devotee. Now, what the purport is also pointing out is that it is important for one to not only observe, but also to follow the acharyas or the great sages who have had this realization. It is not just with the naked eye that one is coming to these realizations. One is also coming to these realizations through the process of hearing and chanting. Hearing from those authorities, those self-realized souls who have seen and who know, and getting this knowledge from them in order to perceive about the existence of the Lord in his creation, that the Lord is everywhere. Those are the essential points of this Mantra 5, which has a very long purport, that the Lord is far away, Goloka Vrindavan, but he's near. He's right here where his devotees want him to be. He is within everything, yet he is outside of everything. Okay, let's go to Mantra 6. And who is next? In Ishopanishad, this is on page 43. Would you like to read it? Mantra 6 on page 43. Oh, we did 7. 7. Yeah, 7.
Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhudvijanatah tatrako mohaka shoka ekatvam anupasyatah. Translation. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him?
Okay, so this is extending further what we were discussing about seeing or perceiving the Lord, the various realization. And in this mantra, the words ekatvam anupashyata is important. If you look at the word-to-word translation, ekatvam says oneness in quality. And anupashyata is of one who sees through authority, or one who sees constantly like that. So it's elaborating further on how to see. One is not just seeing with the naked eye, you see. You are actually seeing it with the help of these self-realized souls, that you are seeing there is unity in all living entities, not only from their experiences, that is the advanced sages, but also from the viewpoint of the revealed scriptures, that is Shastra. Shastra, Brahma Samhita, Bhagavad Gita, and others point out about who the Supreme Being is, as well as his origins. So one should be looking from that angle on what is called the Nirguna platform, where one is not looking from the point of view of material qualities, but is looking from a higher platform. And there are, in the purport, references to, for example, the Vedanta Sutra. It says that Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12, that these all the entities, spiritual entities, that is the living entities as well as the Lord, are meant for enjoyment. They are ananda mayo basyat. They're all meant for enjoyment. By nature and constitution, every living being, including the Supreme Lord, and each of his parts and parcels are meant for eternal enjoyment. But in the material world, the living entities who in the material tabernacle are constantly seeking sense enjoyment, are approaching it in the wrong way. That actually the enjoyment comes from serving the Lord, who is the supreme whole, the ananda, comes from that relationship and not through isolated sense gratification. Another verse that is cited in this mantra is Bhagavad Gita 7.5. So let's look that up. It's talking about all the living creatures, where they are coming from. Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, text 5. Just pass on the microphone to the next person.
Apriyam itastvam anyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhutanam mahabaho yaidam dharyate jagat. Besides these, O mighty armed Arjun, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises of living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature.
Which one did you read? Okay, please read 7-7. Let's see here. 7-5, yes. No, that's correct. So, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. This is the reference to all living creatures throughout the universe. This would include birds, reptiles, ants, aquatics, trees, humans, and so on. They are all emanations of the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. They all belong to this one family of the Supreme Being. So, when we talked about this Anandamayo Basiat, that they are all meant for enjoyment, that enjoyment ought to be sought in the right way. That because they are coming from the Supreme Lord, it's in the relationship with the Supreme Lord that there is enjoyment, not through this process of isolated sense gratification. That enjoyment, true enjoyment, comes from relating the senses to the senses of Krishna, Rishikesh, and not from this material sense gratification. Let's also look at 7:14. So, Nilesh Prabhu, you can read one more, which is in the same chapter. That's also cited in the purport.
Devi, Devi hi isha gunamai mam maya turuttaya mam eva prapatyante mayam itam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it.
So here is the formula of how to become free from anxiety in this material world. The purport said that, that the translation said, that one who sees all living entities as spiritual parks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things, and what can then be illusion or anxiety for him? So if he sees rightly that everyone is connected to the Supreme Lord, and in coming to this realization surrenders to the Lord himself will free the living entity from material miseries. It will happen. No other process is going to lead to that, because the state of the conditioned soul is he's caught up in this cycle of birth and death until he comes to the realization that Krishna, the Supreme Personality, is the source of everything. And until he surrenders, he will remain entangled and in anxiety. So the formula of anxiety is this realization and surrendering to the Lord, whereby which both illusion and anxiety will disappear, and a living entity will then come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And this Prabhupada cites 1854 to say that. And he points out that this Brahma-Bhuta platform and Atma-Bhuta are the same thing. The Atma is the soul, and the Lord is the Supreme Atma. He is the Super Soul. The Supreme Atma is maintaining these living entities, and the Supreme Atma will also come to their rescue to release them from illusion and anxiety upon surrender. So those are the main points of text 7. Let's go to text 8 in the Isha Upanishad, which is on page 55. You can do the English translation, which would be fine.
Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial.
Thank you. So here is this reference to this person. When it says such a person, it's referring to that person talked about in the previous mantras, who has come to this platform to see everything in relation to the Lord. That once he comes to the platform to see everything in relation to the Lord, he will then be able to see who the Supreme Lord himself is. And so here it describes the qualities of the Supreme Lord. It talks about his various opulences. As we said before, he's full in his six opulences. Some of the key words are omniscient. He is knower of everything. He's also omnipotent. He has all the potencies. He is without reproach. Nobody is greater than him. He is without veins. He has such doesn't have a material body like the way we do. And the purport talks about this. The purport says that the Lord doesn't have a body or mind like the conditioned souls, that he's the complete whole, and his mind, body, and himself are all one and the same. It's all spiritual for the Lord. And the description of the Lord is nicely given in the Brahma Samhita, the first text. We should look at that. That is the verse we recite every Saturday. And this is Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachitananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. The key words are Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Vigraha means form. Sat refers to his potency in that he is eternal. Chit, he is full of knowledge. And Ananda, he is full of bliss. So the person who comes to the realization, sees everything in relation to the Lord, must know that the Lord is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. He is eternal, full of knowledge, and he is blissful. And the living entity who comes to this realization then will have perfect vision. And when he enters onto the path of devotional service, he can then relate to the Lord for what he is and derive bliss in the process. That's where that Anandamaya Bhasyat, that quality is going to come from that Supreme, who is the source of all bliss, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's a description of the Supreme Lord. Other key words are Sukram, which means omnipotent. We talked about earlier that the Lord appears as the Archa Vigraha form. The purport goes into that, that for his devotees, in order to make himself approachable in the material world, he comes in this form. But that doesn't mean that he has material quality. He has qualities, saguna, but he's at the same time nirguna, doesn't have material qualities. And the verse also goes into another citation from the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita 9, 11, and 12. Very briefly, those verses refer to people who derive Krishna. And he says that there are these people who don't accept that I have this transcendental spiritual form. They are in ignorance. They are mudas or asses. So those who are in ignorance are mudas. Those who are in knowledge are free of those qualities. Mantra 8 also goes into a couple of other qualities of the Lord. Sudam, antiseptic. Anything that touches him will be purified. He's antiseptic, just like antiseptic. And he's apapa vidam, prophylactic. The one who comes into contact with him, just like a prophylactic drug, it will prevent the recurrence of a disease. In the same way, one who comes in contact with the Lord will be protected. Future miseries as such will be mitigated or diminished. So that comes from the qualities of the Lord. And I think we may just have about time to cover two more mantras. So we will do 9 and 10 of Ishopanishad. Let's do 9, which is on page 63.
अंधम तम प्रविशन्ति हे अविद्यम उपाशते ततो भूया इवाते तमो याउ विद्यायम रताः. Translation: those who engage in the culture of nascent activity shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge.
Thank you. So this mantra offers a study, a comparative study of vidya and avidya. Avidya is ignorance. It is very dangerous to be in that situation. But vidya is knowledge. But it can be even more dangerous when it is misused or is mistaken. That's what nescient knowledge is, knowledge of nescience, misguided. This mantra is very applicable today in the material world. There is all kinds of mass education going on, which is just advancement of material knowledge for the sake of economic development, for the sake of more sense gratification, if you will, that if you do this, you will get that, where there's very little talk about God. God is not in the picture in this mass education that goes on. And even though so much mass education is going on, if you look at the state of people, they are unhappy. They are all under a lot of stress because they are expected to perform by those material standards. You know, there's so much mass education, then people have to partake that and do things that are suggested, obtain results. They may or may not obtain the results. So there can be frustration, there can be stress, there can be unhappiness. This is all avidya. This is the ignorant, a path of ignorance that living entities can pursue. In contrast to that, vidya concerns knowledge, which is God-centered knowledge. So in avidya, we said God is not in the center of those mass education, material discussion. In vidya, everything is relation to God. Mantra 1 of Ishopanishad talks about the key term there is Ishavasya, the Ishavasya principle, that God is a proprietor of everything, and he is providing all living entities. they are being supported by Him. You should know your quota in the material world and use it for your necessities and nothing beyond that. Things like greed and other things don't come in. Exploitation does not come in, which are the things that are going on in the Avidya platform. So Vidya is based on this, on the Isha Vashya principle. It is a God-centered civilization. The other one is not God-centered. And out of the different classes of men that are there, Ishopanishad said, karmis, gnanis, and yogis, it is the karmis who are engaged in this activities of sense gratification. The purport points out 99.99% of the people are engaged in the activities of sense gratification under the flags of, call it industrialism, call it economic development, altruism, political activism. They may even do some humanitarian work. But Ishopanishad points out that any of this humanitarian work, all the isms that are undertaken, if they are not dovetailed to the Supreme Personality from whom everything is emanating, they are of no value. They are useless. But even a little bit of engagement on this path can save one from danger. Danger of the next birth that one will take depending on the activities that have been performed in the present life. So, people who are engaged in gross sense gratification are described as mudas or asses. The supportive verse is Bhagavad Gita 7:15. And I have that just in front of me, where Krishna says, those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, these people do not surrender unto me. And this mantra says that they are going to end up in the darkest regions of the material world. Because as we said, that even a little bit of engagement on the path of devotional service will save one from the greatest danger of descending into the darkest region. Lack of it will take someone over there. That is the message that is given in this purport. There are a couple of key words that are mentioned. One is Veda, Vada, Ratha. Refers to people who may, in the name of Vedas, give education, and this refers to politicians and everything, who give false hopes to people, but that their end goals are all materialistic and misguided. And it talks about Mayaya Partha Gnana class of men who act as self-made gods in the material world, who may even say that I am God, or behave tantamount to that. They are entrapped by Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord, and it is these types of people who the mantra refers to, engaged in culture of nascent activities, will enter into the darkest regions of ignorance. Okay, so let's take up then the final one, which is mantra 10. And Shailesh Prabhu, you can read that.
Anyad evahu vidyaya Nyadahur avidyaya iti shushruma dhiranam enastat vichachakshire. Translation. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nascence.
Okay, so we already talked about the path of nations in the previous mantra. Now we will look at that process of knowledge, which according to this mantra can lead to an entirely different result. And what this mantra is going to say has been said in the Bhagavad Gita. The key verses are in chapter 13, they're verses 8 to 12, that will give the import of what this culture of knowledge should be, that the knowledge that should be practiced, which would free one, which would give real knowledge and free one from the material miseries. So, the process of knowledge, the process actually, that one can use to lead to real knowledge is described here. And it's described in 18 points. So what we should do is have each person read three of them. It's in the Ishopanishad, starting on page 69. Please read three and pass on the mic.
One should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give proper respect to others. One should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. One should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, by the thoughts of his mind, or by his words.
One should learn forbearance even in the face of provocation from others. One should learn to avoid duplicity in dealing with others. One should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization. And one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him the service, and ask relevant questions.
In order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regulative principles enjoined in the revealed scriptures. One must be fixed in the tenets of the revealed scriptures. One should completely refrain from practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization.
One should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. One should not falsely identify himself with a gross material body, nor should one consider those who are related to his body to be his own. One should always remember that as long as he has a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. The best course is to find out the means by which one may regain his spiritual identity.
One should not be attached to more than the necessity of life required for spiritual advancement. One should not be more attached to wife, children, and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. One should not be happy or distressed over desirables and undesirables, knowing that such feelings are just created by the mind.
One should have an unalloyed devotee. One should become an unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Shri Krishna and serve him with rapt attention. One should develop a liking for the residence in a secluded space with a calm and quiet atmosphere, favorable for spiritual culture, and one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. One should become a scientist or a philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body.
Thank you. So, these 18 items, they refer to the process of knowledge, which, if one practices, will lead to real knowledge. This is vidya. The earlier reference about pursuing the path of vidya, that knowledge, it's all spelt out in detail here. It refers to these 18 items, and is also there in Bhagavad Gita. What is being practiced in the material world by the karmis, which we were talking about earlier, is that path of nations, that is avidya. And it's not going to lead to this type of knowledge. It is a dangerous path to pursue, which is what Ishopanishad said, and it recommends this path, pursue this path. which is true knowledge. And it talks about how that other education, avidya, is faulty education. Bhagavad Gita says that's not real knowledge. This is it. And one way of acquiring this knowledge, which this purport mentions, that these instructions of vidya or knowledge must be acquired from a dhira, a person who is a dhira. There's a lot being said in the Bhagavad Gita about a dhira. That is the person with a steady mind and steady disposition, a person who is equipoised. This is the person who is not affected by the opposites. There can be gain or loss, victory or defeat, stress or happiness. It's maintaining equanimity, is equipoised. This is the person, really, when Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the qualities of this individual? How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he behave? Krishna is telling him, that person is this one, dhira, of a steady mind and intelligence. So Ishopanishad says that this process of knowledge should be received from the dhira. How? By hearing these advanced souls, listening to them. True knowledge comes by hearing from the lips of these self-advanced souls, like we do here in these classes that are given when we listen to Vaisheshika Prabhu and other elevated devotees. We are listening to these dhira, self-realized soul. And one can that way become a dhira through this submissive hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. Now, the opposite of this is adhira. The purport point talks about these politicians who are going around in the guise of spiritual knowledge, and you might even see some preachers out there, not all, some misguided ones, who act as instructive leaders but are practicing avidya. They are not practicing vidya. So it's also important to be able to discriminate or distinguish adhira from an adhira. And by hearing submissively from adhira, one can attain actual education. Okay, so I'm now, in order to end, we said that we will cover from 5 to 14. That was rather ambitious. What I'm going to do is just go over the translations of the other four verses and any of the main points. So we can go to Dilip Prabhu here, and if you would read the mantra 11 from the Ishopanishad. Okay, so you can. You are next, I think. Mantra 11, just the English translation, yes.
Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality.
Okay, so what it's pointing out here is that it is important to know about this material knowledge, not that one needs to put it into practice. Srila Prabhupada has said you have to work out there in the material world. In order to hold the mind, the soul and the body together, one has to be out there. You have to have knowledge of the material world, but it's not an end-all and be-all of everything. One should know. At the same time, one should take on this part of vidya, and that is what practice side by side will lead to, allow one to transcend the miseries in the material world. Okay, mantra 12, next. Please read the English translation. Turn the microphone on.
Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute.
Okay, so here it is making distinctions that when you embark on the path of Vidya, you ought to know whom to worship. The recommendation is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not just any entity, not demigods. In the purport, Prabhupada points out about demigod worship, that by worshipping demigods, one can get some temporary benefits. One can even go to heavenly planets. But as soon as the results of that are exhausted, one will come down to the material world. You have to start all over again. So it is temporary. It is temporary, and it's not complete. So that worship is not recommended, as well as worship of impersonal Brahman or any impersonal entities that are worshipped, like the way the Mayavadis do. In our path, the Bhagavata path, that is not recommended. Okay, Mantra 13. It is on page 91.
It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it.
Okay, so this is an extension of Mantra 12. In Mantra 12, it is giving the recommendation that you ought not to worship the demigods. You ought to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here there's a further extension. It cites several verses from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna talks about that if you worship your forefathers, you will go to the planets of the forefathers. If you worship the moon, you'll go to the moon planet. If you worship the sun, the destination will be different. What is recommended is worship of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, in order for one to go back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. So it is pointing out that any path won't do. Sometimes, you know, you hear, well, just take on to this path and it will lead you to the same result. That's not true. It is emphatically said that any path won't do. All paths, in this case, don't lead to Rome. They don't lead to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Bhagavata path is devotional service to the Supreme Personality through a recommended process. And we get this knowledge by hearing from self-realized soul. Undisturbed authorities have explained this. So by hearing from them, that is where we are getting this knowledge which is there in our shastras. Okay, so the final verse now, which is Mantra 14, page 101. Next, please.
One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods. And animals.
Thank you. So that's the final recommendation. That, yes, it continues. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. So here is the destination. The recommendation was to offer devotional service to the Supreme Personality, that it says a person who has taken on this path should know about the personality of Godhead. He has been described in the Brahma Samhita. He has been described in the Bhagavad Gita. His transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, some of which we discussed, have been described, as well as this cosmic manifestation or creation that he has created, which is temporary in nature, has been described.